All right, thanks. Thanks for the introduction. Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Zhi Qiang. So I'm an assistant professor from Nanjing University, China. So today I'm going to talk about our project called Grapple. So this is a joint work done by John Thorpe, Kai Wang, and Professor Harry Xu from UCLA, and also my students like Qiu Hong, Yifei, Shenming, and my colleagues, Professor Lin Zhang and Xuandong from Nanjing. So large-scale software systems form the backbone of the modern computing, like the operating systems, databases, large-scale distributed systems. And so it's very important to ensure the reliability of these systems. To achieve this goal, people from both industry research made a lot of efforts, but unfortunately, bugs still commonly occur in such systems. So one popular category of bugs is we call finitely related, meaning that objects involved in such bugs are supposed to obey the specification, which can be described as a finitely machine. A bug manifests once an illegal event occurs and driving the object to an erroneous state in the finitely machine. So we can find a lot of such bugs in the real-world systems, like the logs related, where the lock is acquired but is not released, and also like memory bugs, socket leaks, and also the mishandled exceptions can also be treated as such bugs. Now, in the following, let's look at a particular example, very simple example, to see what the finitely related bugs look like. So this shows the finitely machine describing the property of the Java I/O file writer object, and also the bottom shows a very simple piece of code. It is a buggy code related to the above property. So let's look at the property. So for any like file writer object, at the beginning it starts at init state, and it transits to open state once there is a new constructor is called, and it remains at open for any number of writes. Finally, it goes to close if there's a close method is invoked. For any other event, will drive the object into the error state. Let's look at the simple example again. And for example, here we first create a file writer object called out. And in the another branch, if the branch is true, the out will call the write and then close. So if I transform this program into another form, we call control flow graph. Sorry about that, the font size is pretty small, so you don't need to really care about that. You only need to know is like we have four paths in this for this program because there are two branches. Let's look at this path A. So path along the path A, which corresponds to the two true branches, the function call actually is new, write, and then close. If we check this sequence against the finitely machine, definitely we can conclude that it works fine. And similarly, we can do the checking for all other three paths. And we know the path D is fine because there's no events involved at all. And for path B, C, they are buggy because they actually violate the specification described as the finitely machine. Right, for the B, you only have new, but there's no close called, and similar for C. In the real world, actually, a large-scale systems, there are a lot of such bugs occurred. This slide only show one real bug example regarding the socket leak from the zookeeper. It's also very simple. I just simplify the real program. So within the function connect one, we create a socket by new, and then through a bunch of statements, we encounter a method called initiate connection. So within this initiate connection, the socket object will be used to transfer the data and all, and finally it's closed. But it's possible that between the new and initial connection, an exception could occur. So then that will drive the execution flow into the cache block, leading a socket leak. So if you are interested, you can check more the real bug examples into our paper. Now let's look at, in order to detect these finite state relative bugs, actually we need some analysis. Firstly, we need the data flow analysis to extract the call sequences on the object, and also in order to retrieve the very precise and complete call sequence information, we may need alias analysis. Additionally, if we want, in order to distinguish the different branches so as to eliminate the infeasible passes, we may need the path sensitivity, as well as the context sensitivity to distinguish the different calling contexts. So for example, in this, the above example, if we look carefully into the path C, in fact, it's a false warning because this path actually is infeasible at runtime. Performing this analysis on real-world, large-scale systems is non-trivial. We have challenges. Firstly, in order to get the very useful analysis result, we usually need to perform the highly precise analysis, which has the high computation complexity. And on the other hand, so this analysis needs to be conducted on the very large-scale systems, which result in the intensive computation and memory consumption. So it's really hard to do it practically due to the poor scalability of the state of the art. So in this work, we revisited this poor scalability problem from a system perspective. So in other words, instead of optimizing the algorithms, we tried to build scalable big data systems to support those sophisticated analyses. So under the systemized approach, we first need to transform the analysis into some simple data, simple computation. And in this particular work, we formulated both the alias and the data flow analysis as the transcalar computation over some kind of program graphs. As such, we can build a system by leveraging the highly parallel computing and the huge amounts of disks to do the property checking. So in the following, I'll use an example to show how to perform this analysis as a dynamic transcalar computation, what challenges we have to face, and also our respective solutions to it. Almost the same example as previous slide. So in order to do the data flow analysis, given this program on the left-hand side, we can actually first generate a program graph containing all the call events and execution flow information, so which is shown on the right-hand side. And now having this graph, we do the reachability computation by adding the transcalar edges on this graph. So for example, in this graph, we know the new event is reachable from the entry, and also the write is reachable from new. Therefore, we can add a transcalar edge from entry to write, indicating the write is also reachable from entry through new. So by doing this, we can know at which state the object arrives at each program point. Of course, this is just for the demonstration purpose. I just simplify the analysis. So if you're interested, you can read our paper. But this could generate the incorrect result, since some passes in the program graph could be infeasible at runtime, as I mentioned before. For instance, here, if we consider another path, we could add an edge from entry to another write, but in fact, this path is invalid, since the path condition is false, actually. So to enable the path sensitivity, we need to consider the path constraints besides the reachability computation. How to do that? We just embed the real constraint with each edge and test if the path condition is satisfiable along the computation. In order to do this, it's not that easy. So there are challenges. First, how to represent those constraints efficiently, and how to quickly find a path and compute its constraint. Apparently, it's prohibitive to directly embed the real constraint string with each edge, since first, the constraints are variable-sized, And also the number of constraints could be same as the number of edges, which is a huge number in our analysis graph. Moreover, since most paths are composed of some sub-paths, so there's actually a lot of common sub-constraints, the naive representation will lead to a huge number of duplicates. What we did is actually, instead of embedding the actual constraint string with each edge, we adopt a more efficient representation. So in the program graph, as shown on the right-hand side, we represent each constraint as a path encoding, and later we retrieve the path constraint with the help of a special graph we call the control flow execution tree, which will be discussed shortly. So by doing this, we can get the benefits of the concise constraint representation and also the efficient path tracking and constraint computation. So what is a control flow execution tree? So for example, let's look at the this piece of code shown on the left-hand side. Then we can create a control flow execution tree for this piece of code with the root node as ID 0. Once we encounter a branch in the program, we create two children nodes. One is the fourth child with ID 2 times n plus 1, and the true child with ID 2 times n plus 2, where the n is the ID of the parent node. And we do this so on and so forth until we create a complete control flow execution tree for each method. And know that we also need to embed the real conditional expression with each node so as to later we retrieve the real constraint. And having this control flow execution tree, we can encode any intra-procedural path as a pair shown by a ID node start and ID end. And later we can efficiently decode the paths by just doing a backward traversal. So take this rightmost path example. For example, if I want to get this constraint, so I just encode this path at 0, 6. And then later I can retrieve the real constraint for this path by just do a backward traversal based on this control flow execution tree and collect all the expressions. And for interprocedural part, almost the same thing, we create the intra control flow execution tree separately for each function, each method, and then we add some connecting edges, actually it's two kinds of connecting edges, the call and return edges. Those edges are annotated with the call side ID to distinguish the calling context, and also the symbolic equivalent to pass the actual arguments to the formal parameters. And therefore, given any inter-procedural path, we can encode it as a list of intervals, and later we can decode it by doing the backward traversal separately for each subpath, and then combine them into a conjunctive form to get the actual inter-procedural path condition. And we implement our work as a single machine disk-based graph system, which adopts the edge pair centric computation with the constraint solving. Definitely there are a lot of system issues we need to consider during the system implementation. For example, like the constraint solving, constraint caching, and also the context sensitivity issues. So due to the time limit here, I don't give you more details, but if you're really interested, please read the paper. Now let's look at the evaluation. So we conducted a set of experiments on four large-scale distributed systems, including ZooKeeper, Hadoop MapReduce, HBase, and HDFS. So we implemented four front ends to detect four types of such finite state-related bugs, namely the Java I/O resource leaks, socket misuses, mishandled exceptions, and also the incorrect log usage. So this table shows the number of bugs we found over the four subjects. So in total, we got like more than 300 bugs and only 17 false positives reported. And until now, we reported all the bugs to the developers. And until now, there are 4 major and critical bugs are confirmed. Regarding the performance, you know, we also do the experiments to test how long our grapple needs to analyze those graph, those big large scale systems. So it took from 43 to like 13, almost 34 hours another time. Yeah, it varies a lot. I think it depends on, you know, the program structure and the graph characteristics, and also the constraint, you know, complexity. To further break down the analysis cost, we divide the total time into 4 categories: the I/O time during the computation, and the constraint lookup time, the constraint solving time, and also edge computation time. As you can see, in fact, the constraint solving time dominates the analysis cost. And also, we compared our grapple with some, you know, state-of-the-art analysis approaches or tools. So, firstly, we implement by ourselves a traditional workplace-based analysis algorithm, so which is totally like memory-dependent, and we try to analyze use them to analyze the same workload with what we did by grapple, and unfortunately, the all random memory easily. And also, in order to verify the effectiveness of our path encoding decoding mechanism, we implement a naive simplified implementation, which encodes the constraint into strings. So this table shows some performance data. So the first column shows the number of partitions needed. Since now, if we don't use the encoding mechanism, the graph size will be much bigger. Therefore, we have to make them more partitions. And as such, they need more iterations to finish the fixed point computation. So as can be seen, the total time was way bigger than what the grapple needs. To sum up, so today I'm talking about our work, which is try to do the static finite property checking of the very large scale code bases. And we proposed an efficient path encoding decoding mechanism to help accelerate the computation. And finally, we have this tool Grapple, which is a single machine octa-core graph system. And now it's open sourced, so welcome to try it. Thank you for listening. I'm ready for any questions or comments.
Interesting work, hey. Rodrigo from ETH. So is the job of the programmer to provide these finite state machines?
Yes.
And how easy is it to specify? Does it take a long time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of guys already asked me about this one. I think for our experiments, it's not that tough to, it seems not that tough to describe those finite state machines, since if you really want to detect one kind of such bugs, you should know the behavior of this class or these objects. But what I want to mention here is also, if you really want to do this like in a batch mode, right? You want to detect lots of a lot of kinds of such bugs, like for a lot of types of objects. I think there's some work which talked to automatically detect such finite machines from the like traces of the execution. Yeah.
Okay, just a second, quick question. What if you have, for example, if you send one of these objects through a polymorphic call that spawns in many, many places, like dozens of methods, do you still go and try to catch all of these methods?
Yeah, that's also a good question. This is related to the front end. So what I didn't mention here is in our work, we actually separate the front end with back end. The front end is kind of how to generate the program graphs to containing enough and precise semantic information of the program. And then the backend talks about how to efficiently do the analysis by, you know, adding transitive edges and constraint solving and so on and so forth. So for the polynomialism or other features like the like pointers and so on and so forth, I think we need to pay more efforts to the front end to generate more precise like graphs. But definitely that can be done. So what we need to do is try to improve that part to reduce the false positive rate further. Yeah.
There was a question over there.
Hi, Elo Rabi, actually Samsung. I have a question about like state machine size and how it affects analysis time.
Yeah. So I think there's a quite detailed technical question. I'll be glad to hear it today. So in fact, in our formulation or the implementation details, I only show you a graph, a program graph, which is a simplified version. So in fact, if when we implement this one, we need actually in the graph for each program point, we need to generate a lot of points indicating different states. Here, the number of points at each program point should be equal to the number of states in the finite state machine. So if you have the finite state machine is a bigger size, definitely the program graph will be much bigger. So that's just about the scalability. But I'm confident that our tool can handle even more, even bigger graphs. Yeah.
There was one more question. Good. So I had a question. So you emphasized that this is a single machine solution, and it's impressive the scalability that you get out of it. But let me ask, so the single machine, is that a feature or is that a limitation?
Actually here, you know, in terms of the technical contribution or limitations, single machine is not the key. We can definitely, you know, implement our approach in a distributed mode or GPUs or so on and so forth. But here, I think the single machine is just, you know, the for like, you save your money, so it's kind of the economy stuff, yeah.
All right, thank you.